Welcome to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. I'm Cheryl, and I invite you to join me on my quest to find out, why are people homeschooling? How do you do it? How does it differ from region to region? And should I homeschool my kids? Stick with me as I interview homeschooling families across the country to unfold the answers to each of these questions week by week. With us today, we have Nicola from Hatched on Instagram. Nicola, welcome. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you so much for having me as well. It's lovely to be here.
Thank you for being here. Now, you reached out to me on Instagram, and why don't you start by just telling us what made you do that? What made you even find my page on Instagram and where you're located? Because that's kind of a cool perspective for this interview as well.
Yeah. Goodness me, so where do I start? I at the very beginning, I suppose pre-COVID, I was working, or I do work as a lecturer within a university in Scotland. So it's a big city in Scotland that I work, and I had started to notice changes in education and things that were happening that I wasn't so keen on that were going on behind the scenes. And I'd started to get kind of disillusioned with all of this. So I set up Hatched initially, and it was actually, I had hardly any subscribers, and I was just ranting basically about the system and all the things that were wrong with it. And with that, when I started to post these things, I came across a lot of home education material. And when I was looking online, a lot of the home education stuff is US based. We don't have much in terms of kind of home education in the UK. And I started to see there was a bit of a gap there, and there was things that we could fill with the UK and learn from some of the stuff that was going on in the US. So I started following lots of people, looking at various home education, and then I came across your podcast initially. I think it just appeared on Instagram, you know, just a kind of who to follow sort of suggestion. And I saw it, and I just loved your manner. You were so relaxed and so kind of so nice, the way you were speaking to people, and just, it was a really calm, chilled podcast. And then you posted something, I think it was maybe a few months ago, you posted something about the fact that you were totally in the system at one point, you know, you were kind of coffee, wine, no kids, career, all of those kind of things. And it just hit such a chord that I thought, I have to get in contact with you because this is really interesting. And also I'd seen your journey with home education as well. So yeah, it was just really interesting. And I just thought it really resonated with me. So I thought, I have to get in contact. And that's what I did. I got in contact with you and you responded, which was lovely.
That's so nice. That gives me the chills because, like, even this morning, I was like, why am I skirting my kids off to the in-laws so that I can come back, work on a podcast? They're kind of like, you know, you keep your kids home to homeschool and then you shuffle them off to us to go do something that doesn't even make any money, you know? And I'm looking at my house that's like just destroyed. You know, it hasn't been vacuumed, clothes haven't been put away. And I'm like, I'm spending my time doing the podcast. I should be cleaning. And I'm like, what is this even for? I don't even make any money with this. But to hear that story, I feel like you were put in front of me today for that purpose, to say like, no, you are reaching people. Somebody does resonate with you, even if it's only one. And I felt the same way when I listened to other homeschool podcasts. Everybody sounded so prim and proper and perfect. And I was like, that's just not how most people live. I mean, most people have a house that hasn't been vacuumed and clothes that have not been put away. And, you know, it like, where do we fall in this homeschool thing? Are we good enough? Can we measure up?
Yeah. And I think that on top of that, the guests that you've had on are equally down to earth and really interesting and a good mix. And so, yeah, I've really enjoyed it. I try not to miss any of them. I just love listening to it. I just think it's just such a nice, definitely, as I say, it resonates, but it's just a nice, relaxing podcast to listen to. And there's loads of things on there. Just good advice. Just and you, as you say, there's the kind of prim and proper, this is how you should homeschool, these kind of things should be the way that you educate kids. But yours was just full of excellent advice, and that's what I enjoyed, and that's why I got in contact with you.
Oh, thank you so much for that. So what were some of the things that you were, now you don't have kids currently, correct?
No, that's right, yeah.
But something in you, as you were lecturing, said, I'm seeing something that I don't want even the kids that I'm lecturing to get this sort of message. And if you could talk a little bit about what you were seeing, and especially being in Scotland. I mean, we kind of know what we're seeing here in the U.S., and I'm sure it varies a little bit from the East Coast to the West Coast to down south. But mm-hmm. what about in other countries? Is this message worldwide that the kids are getting?
It's really interesting. I think it's slowly starting to wake up across, you know, globally across various countries. But I think the US, as I said, way ahead of that with home education and has been for some time. But I was working in industry initially. So I worked as a graphic designer beforehand, and then I became a lecturer at an art school. And I was noticing that the students weren't equipped with any of the social skills or ability to just problem solve, or and they were coming from quite good schools, I thought, in the UK. I thought our education system was excellent. I didn't really know much. Because I don't have kids, I didn't really know much about our primary and secondary education. But I was starting to see a dip in standards, and the students that were coming through, there was mental health issues, there was all kinds of things going on. And so I started to question what was happening and why this was happening. And the more that I looked back the way into education, spoke to friends who have kids, I started to realise how bad the education system was. And I thought, is it just certain schools? Is it happening in Scotland? Is it happening in England? Is it happening in, you know, Wales and Ireland and all around the UK? And beyond that, I started looking at the US, much more stats coming out of the US as well, I suppose. And yeah, it was happening across all of these different places, Canada, you know, the more I explored, the more I was starting to see. And definitely through a Western lens, I noticed that we're indoctrinating our kids in schools very, very quickly with agendas and things that are being fed to us from government sort of strategies and things as well. And it's not helping them, you know, it's not helping them at all. They're not being equipped with the right stuff to actually go out and fend for themselves in the world. And that's where I noticed that the problems were occurring. They were leaving university more kind of lacking in confidence and worried about everything than they were when they came in. And that's not right either, you know. And I started to see lots of our kind of remits and things that we were pushing were all coming from a very particular ideology, and I just didn't sit right with me at all. And so I started to question it. But it was quite isolating at first, because in Scotland, we were very much quiet about it. Our education system is very different. We either have a private education or state education. There's no kind of micro schools or any kind of different education in Scotland. It's one or the other, basically. And that was one of the things that I noticed very, very quickly kind of happened. You know, just the sorts of standards that we were getting. England even has more options with kind of micro schools and things like that, but we just didn't. And I started to realise that was possibly one of the reasons, was there was only state education, pretty much, unless you had a lot of money and you could send your kids to private education. So I started to investigate more, and the more I researched, the worse it got, basically. Yeah.
And I feel like there's so many layers. So there's the layer of, is this the best way to learn? You know, every kid that's just born on in that year, you know, between these dates, they're all going to be sitting in a class together. Meanwhile, you do have some kids that are more hyperactive, some that are probably picking it up and then getting bored, so they're not paying attention. And, you know, so you have that aspect and the whole being like sitting all day long. I don't know if it's that way in Scotland, but the kids are sitting for like 6 hours, with the exception of, okay, get up and stand in a line and we'll get you outside for 20 minutes to play. Maybe a gym class, but it's definitely not moving as you learn. You know, they're not really integrating the two. And then from the agendas getting pushed, which I didn't realize that was going on in Scotland as well. I don't know much about it. Again, I have a public school education, so I don't know anything. You know, I'm like the dumb American that doesn't know about how schooling works in other parts of the world. But I've looked into a little bit about like the one book I read. It's There's No Such Thing as Bad Weather. She talks about growing up in Sweden and, you know, around there, mm-hmm. and how that was much mm-hmm. more learning out in nature. They had actual like forestry schools, which mm-hmm. I think are popping up a little bit more in the United States, but definitely not as prevalent as some of the other countries. But you guys don't seem to have that, right? If you have just public school or private?
We have some of those schools, but they can only be attended, you know, sort of weekends and things. You can if you've taken your kids out for home education, then you can use those schools if you want to. But the home education system here has a lot more kind of bureaucracy around it, I suppose. If you decide that you want to home educate your children, then there's a lot of paperwork and a lot of things you have to answer to. And I'm not sure how it is in the US, but I know that people come around to your house and check that it's viable for you to be able to do home education. And that's off-putting in itself for parents who are maybe alarmed by authority or haven't experienced authority very much, you know. The wording and all of the bureaucracy is really kind of high language, you know. It's quite off-putting for parents to, who just want to do this and decide it sounds like it's too much work, there's too much legality behind it, they're panicking about all of the things that might happen to them. There's a threat that, you know, within the kind of the sort of language that's within the website, the government website, it does say that you could face prison or, you know, various things if your kids aren't in school. Now, when you investigate underneath this, this isn't true, but it's all of this kind of alarming language that I think really puts parents off in the UK in particular. And then when I looked around, you're right, Scandinavian countries have got, I think, a better education system. Some of those countries and Sweden, etc., are really good. But what I did find out was that Germany isn't even allowed to home educate. You're not allowed. It's against the law.
I heard that.
Yeah, just crazy. So I was finding out lots of different things from lots of different countries, and this was just kind of building up, and I just kind of started to put this, as I say, onto Hatched and just speak about it, what I was finding and how interesting this is, because I have a nephew, so this was kind of really... It was starting to resonate more with me now. You know, I hadn't really thought about children, or I wasn't particularly maternal at the time, so I wasn't that interested. But the more that it started to affect him, the more I was kind of like, let me just see what's going on here. And I thought about it. I thought about the fact that in the UK anyway, you're in school, secondary and primary school for 13 years, and then you're in university for another 4 years. So it's 17 years of full education that you're actually in. So yeah, it's a long time to have control over a child.
17 years is a long time. And I'm with you on, like, my sister had kids early in life and I had kids later in life, and she's 6 years older anyways. So I was kind of seeing things, but not paying enough attention to it. But it is funny that, you know, her youngest is now graduating high school. And I remember last year her saying to me that her older one, who was about 20 at the time, got mm-hmm. a speeding ticket in the mail, and he took cash, put it in an envelope, and was just going to mail the cash on without, like, the stub for it. And it wasn't even asking for money. It was saying, like, what are you pleading? If you plead guilty, you could have to pay anywhere from this amount to this amount. And he just looked at the amount, put the cash in the envelope, and was about to write. And I think he asked her, how do I write an envelope? Like, how do I write an address to mail this? And then my sister was like, wait, first of all, you're 20 and you don't know how to write an envelope. And second of all, why are you mailing cash? And third of all, you're not putting any sort of reference in there to link this back to you. So it was, like, he went to a good school. It was a public school, but I mean, and I know that there are certain things that parents have to teach and certain things that we expect the teachers to teach in school, but nowhere are we having some sort of, like, manual, like, this is your responsibility and this is the teacher's, you know. We have parent-teacher conferences, but those are more, this is how your kid's doing, you know, I think your kid needs these services, or your kid's doing fine. You know, it's not, we're not having those conversations with our teachers. The classes are too big, the teachers are too overworked, and everybody's just expecting the other ones doing it so that everyone can throw their hands up at the end of the day and say, wasn't my responsibility. And then we're wondering why kids are coming out of school and don't know how to write a check, or even little things like compound interest, you know, when you buy something. And a teenage girl said to me the other day, she goes, yeah, I bought that car. It was only 5% interest rate. And I'm like, well, you know, my husband kind of said it to me later. He's like, God, they don't even realize how much that actually is because of how it compounds over time and how you're paying probably like three times the price of the item, you know, over the life of the loan. But 5% sounds so little. And it's, does that fall on the teachers or does that fall on the parents? Or should there be a better job from the government to say, this is your responsibility, this is yours?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand that, like, there are situations where, like, where the government we'd want them to be involved if a child was being beaten, neglected, malnourished. But what you were saying about them putting the language that they do and threatening jail time, that's not out of love of the child.
No.
You know, if you really cared about, first of all, if the child is getting beaten and neglected, they'd be getting neglected nights and weekends as well, not just in school. No, if they're in school, maybe a teacher can see it. And as a mandated reporter, like they are in the U.S., they have to tell Child Protective Services this child needs additional help. But I feel like there's a reason, a more sinister reason that they're putting language like we can come to your house at any time and, you know, making it sound so terrible. Like there's so many layers, and I can understand, I've been there myself, how parents just are frightened and say, okay, I'll just let the government do it.
Yeah. And they also have, as I said, they have 17 years in the UK of a child, you know, that's a long time to have control. And I think I was speaking to someone this morning and we were saying, why are they so insistent on these things? And when you start to look at it, it's just fantastic, isn't it? You get them at the prime when they're learning and they're just that malleable stage where you can kind of control them. And if you can do that, wow, you can get them under the spell of being reliant on the government. You know, they come out of that at the other end, 21, 22, and they expect the government to do everything for them. They don't do anything. They're very passive learners. Nothing's really kind of, you know, they're not proactive with what they're doing. That's a brilliant situation to have a society, isn't it? Completely listening to what they're being told and not questioning anything. That was the other shocking thing that I thought with the students coming out of university. No criticality whatsoever. No questioning of being told anything by authority, just obeying everything they were told. And that's that work, that 17 years just fits in perfectly if that's what they're aiming to do.
I think it is, because like you said, there's very few things in the world that every country would be in lockstep with. You know, that every country would agree this is the best way to do it, right? And so for education of the, you know, and in such a short time, because like, were your grandparents in school for 17 years?
No.
No. Were your parents?
They would have thought
even
that was ridiculous.
Right.
No, my parents weren't either. Yeah, they weren't in for that length of time.
In such a short time. And I think it has to do with the women's movement too. I don't know what that is like in Scotland, but in America, it, you know, for my grandmother's age, it was the woman stays at home and cares for the family, and the father goes to work and makes the money. And then in the 60s, when we were like, hey, yeah, we want to burn our bras and go to work too. It's, I mean, when you think about that, it's like, are you people crazy? Why do you want to go sit in a cubicle all day? Now, granted, there are jobs that, you know, are fulfilling and worthwhile. I just didn't have one of them. But but yeah, it's like, it's not that great to rush off and, you know, go to work all day. Although I did get three breaks a day when I was at work, and I don't get that with my children at home.
No, that's true.
But how did that progression happen in Scotland?
I think it was a very similar thing to what you were explaining there. We certainly take, in the West, we certainly take our cues from the US, and that can be unfortunate in some circumstances. We're certainly seeing that sweep of cancel culture and people being deplatformed at universities and things, where all of that is happening over here, and it has been for some time as well. So whatever happens in the US, we still kind of have that echo of it happening within the UK, the West in general. And so, yeah, we're probably very, very similar. There's a parallel there as well. So my grandparents, definitely my grandmother would have, you know, stayed at home. She was at home all the time and she looked after the kids. My mum would have been in that kind of 60s, 70s sort of revolution. I don't know if she was quite as rebellious. She certainly was more of a homemaker than, but she did go out to work, but maybe not as much. She was more of a homemaker, certainly, and looked after us. But then my generation, we got sold a dud. We were told that this was the way to go, that, you know, career was important. Who cares about, you know, husbands and men and, you know, any of that stuff. And you just want to have single girl lifestyle, go out drinking, you know, new men all the time, all this kind of stuff. And it was just such a lie. You know, the whole thing was just ridiculous and went against every instinct that most females have. When they admit it to themselves, most females have that instinct as well.
Yeah, and because you don't, like, wake up the next day from partying and, you know, thinking like, yes, this is where I wanted my life to go.
Yeah.
You don't ever have that feeling of accomplishment after it. I mean, even...
No.
I think it's more the planning of it and thinking like, okay, Thursday night or Friday night, we're doing this, we're going to do that. That has, because even when you're in it at the moment, I remember always thinking like, all right, I'm tired, I'm sweaty, I'm then I'd rather be at home eating food. <You know>?
yeah.
So it really, but then you watch shows like Sex and the City and, Friends wasn't really like a party show, but I was mm-hmm. very into that show, and they all kind of had that single life or the broken relationship kind of, you know, baby out of wedlock situation.
Yeah.
Which was, they like were proud of it, so to speak. And I'm trying to think of some of the other, those were the shows to break. I mean, that was probably one of the first shows to even have a lesbian on.
Yeah,
Friends,
that's true.
Yeah. So that kind of like broke the mold there. And mm-hmm. it is interesting to think of the shows like, you know, All About or All in the Family, I think was one that was popular here for probably like my parents' generation to go to, you know, the other extreme. Do you guys get our television shows and movies and music too?
Well, yeah, we definitely get films. We definitely get, we got Friends, we got, you know, Sex and the City and all those kind of ones as well, definitely. I think for us, again, because we were taking our cues from the US, then a lot of our soaps and things were following similar storylines. We were introducing new kind of same-sex partners within soaps, you know, and various things like that were happening, kind of lots more emphasis on career women. And you're right, it was almost, the media was indoctrinating us and we didn't even realise it. We got sold this. Over here we had, probably mid to late 90s, we had a thing called Lad Culture, which I don't know if it ever made it over to the US, but it was very much the kind of women, it was really kind of played up about women drinking beer and just being really kind of like the sort of frat boy sort of personality. And that was a real thing that got pushed and sold in the media. And yeah, it was called the kind of Ladette, the kind of female version of that. And that became incredibly popular and it was really pushed. And when I look back, I'm thinking, God, that was really coerced. That was a deliberate thing to get us to think these things, you know?
Yeah.
And that just makes me really sad that that's what happened and we fell for it, stupidly.
Hi, everyone. Thank you again for listening to this week's episode. I wanted to reach out and give you a discount code for the Tuttle Twins. The Tuttle Twins help children develop critical thinking skills about real-world concepts, sharing ideas with kids that most adults don't even know. Let's be honest. The Tuttle Twins books recognize that the world is full of companies, people, and politicians who want to expose your children to ideas that you do not support. I read them with my kids. My five-year-old at least can understand. The one-year-old, she's almost there. But they provoke some really great conversations, things that I wouldn't necessarily think to talk to him about. And they present these concepts in a way that kids can actually understand, and it makes sense. So please check out thehomeschoolhowto.com, and under listener discounts, you can find the Tuttle Twins and use code Cheryl40 for 40% off All products for kids ages 5 through 11. That's CHERYL40. Now, you do have to use my link and code to get the discount and so that they know I sent you, which would be greatly appreciated. Thank you so much and enjoy the rest of your listening.
But yeah, I can see where the pattern started. I can see where in Scotland and in the UK, we had Tony Blair came in as the Prime Minister and he pushed education. I know that you had the kind of No Child Left Behind, which meant no child got ahead. There was lots of these kind of things that happened. And it was definitely you went to university, you didn't get a job straight after school. And so that kind of sells this staying younger for longer lifestyle, you know, the kind of infantilized lifestyle and remaining a student and someone who doesn't have responsibility for even longer. You know, I think that was definitely sold to us at the time.
That's so interesting, especially when you think of that one movie, I'm not going to remember the name of it now, but where he was a college kid, he just kept dropping out for 10 years he was but very good looking, you know, studly guy, gets all the girls year after year. And then Obama, he raised the age of health insurance to you could be covered under your parents' health insurance to age 26 under the Obama. When I graduated college, my mother was like, you need a job because if you're not in college, you're no longer qualified under my health insurance. So, you know, you're 22, okay, get a job. And it was like, got to get the first one that offers you health insurance. And then you can go find the career of, you know, your dreams, I suppose. But it was that push where now you don't have to even be in college. You just have to be under 26 years old and you're still covered under your parents' health insurance. And it to me at the time, I mean, I'm sure that helps a lot of people, but when you think about it in the way of making this infantile, you know, persona mm-hmm. over kids, that mm-hmm. definitely doesn't give them that push to get a job, to have healthcare. Now exactly. You can get into the whole other conspiracy of, is it healthcare or is it sick care? And, you know, so that, but I think you think of things like if I were in a car accident or got cancer or, you know, I'd like to be covered and not have hundreds of thousands of dollars of bills. So that's very interesting.
I understand that. I think that over here, obviously we have the NHS, the failing NHS, but and so that becomes something, another thing where you rely on the government because that's our system is being provided by the government. So but really we're actually paying for it.
Is that socialized healthcare where you all pay the same amount and then get this, you go to a government run health facility for care?
Yeah, it's pretty much all we have. We have private hospitals as well, however most of the hospitals are at NHS and we pay for that via our income tax and taxes. So that kind of gets paid, comes straight out of your paycheck with the tax and supposedly goes towards the NHS, but we're not really seeing much at the other end of that as to whether that's any good or not. But that's another thing that young people are then very much indoctrinated into, more of the government control, you know, so the government looks after your health, the government looks after your education, all these things the government is kind of controlling, and they're getting into it more and more. There's more areas that they're trying to get, you know, access to and into with young people. And they've also kind of provided, in Scotland anyway, we have free education, so you don't pay fees for your education in Scotland. However, you are paying via tax, and there's definitely a level of it. So you're always paying for it, but it's just very stealthy, the way that they do it. But at the point of actually getting the service, it doesn't appear like you're paying for it. So that's how we got more young people into university as well, just by this fallacy that they were getting free education. And then I suppose that keeps them in education for longer, but then there was more offers for, you know, free travel for under 25s. And, you know, so it's just constantly keeping you in the system, keeping you young, stopping you from growing up, taking responsibility and accountability and learning any of the skills that are needed. And that's the thing. I see industry now saying that the students we're producing aren't coming out with any of the skills they need and therefore they've changed the way they're hiring people. They're hiring people now on a skills-based hiring system rather than qualifications because it's just not there. So yeah, it's a really interesting current situation that we're in with universities, I think.
Yeah, and that's kind of a funny pun on words too, because if you have the skills, you would think that means you have the qualifications, but they're looking at it as your qualifications are your diplomas. And yeah, when I talked to the author of The Tuttle Twins, their Connor Boyack, he said that he doesn't even look at degrees when he hires for his company. And if he sees one, he's like, oh, they've been indoctrinated that much longer.
That's really interesting. I listened to that one actually recently and I loved that one because everything that he was saying was just echoing with exactly the experience that I'm having at university with the students at the moment as well. So yeah, I can understand why people just think you've had another three, four years of indoctrination. So do we really want this person or do we want someone who is home educated and then went out into the world and made their way and can take responsibility for those things? So yeah.
Yeah,
I think that's going to become quite a strong thing in the next few years.
And with my husband being in the trades, like he says, they can't hire anyone. No place in America really has the ability to hire people right now. I don't know where all the workers went, but is it the same in Scotland?
Yeah, I mean, we notice my partner is in the trades as well. And so it's very much trying to find skills there is really, really difficult because there's no one coming up through apprenticeships or, you know, any of those kind of things. Everyone's gone to university. So you don't know who's coming up behind you to take on the mantle of whatever it is you're working in as well.
Yeah. And when you go through university, you know, an extra 4 years or more, they kind of put in your head too that you're above any sort of skilled labor work. You know, you can't be an electrician. You know, you should be sitting behind a computer in the corporate world. Well, what does that produce? What does anyone in the corporate world actually produce in society? You need the electrician, which is a lot of math and, you know, just knowing how things work, physics. It's a more skilled job. You should have to have more education or at least more hands-on learning.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, to do that, it should be looked at higher when you're someone definitely like an electrician than when you're someone sitting in a corporate office just pushing emails and sitting in meetings all day.
Absolutely. And that's the other thing is that where I'm working, I thought, because I've been a creative person for quite some time, and I kind of do a lot of drawing and sketching and, you know, kind of that sort of stuff alongside digital design. But what I learned was that the hands-on manual kind of work that's being done, whether that's creating something out of wood and you're a joiner, or whether you're a plumber or, you know, kind of electrician or whatever, or, you know, something that at the end of it you can show you've produced something.
Yeah.
And this is the really interesting thing is if you do that with kids, they have this reward cycle in their brains, which when they're working with their hands, it's a direct link to their brain, which just lights up their brain with dopamine. It makes them really happy that they're producing and creating. And so when we bung them in front of screens, there's a complete disconnect. There's no, you know, there's no kind of connection with themselves or the world around them, or, you know, so I found that really interesting. And I looked much more into creativity and kind of the area that I was teaching in to find out that we're kind of, I don't know what it's like in the US, but in terms of arts, we've removed that from the curriculum in state education. So there's not much of that. And again, I wonder if that's deliberate.
Well, yes, but you just connected a lot of dots for me. Wow, that's so cool. So you, if you've heard my podcast, you've heard me talk about like, I can't be the homeschool mom. I'm not crafty, right? Like I just didn't grow up and I grew up in public school, but we did do some arts and stuff, but that's beside the point. So I've talked before on here about how kids that have like anxiety issues and ADD and stuff like that, like could some of that be, you know, once we take out the red dye and high fructose corn syrup from their diets and really push water and getting them a good night's sleep. If they are doing things like, you know, when you're hauling manure and, you know, cutting down the corn or whatever, all the things that I don't know how to do, but I'd love to teach my kids you know, and you're doing heavy manual labor. And at the end of it, you see the fruits of your labor, because it's like, we get to eat this, you know, burger here, because, and we raised that cow. She had a good life, and we hauled her manure every day, and we fed her every day, and we cleaned all the stuff. And, you know, like, this is really the end result, fruits of our labor. But in a microcosm of that is a craft project. Like, it doesn't matter if I'm good at arts and crafts. Am I giving him a little bit of something that he can produce? Because you're right. He's connecting that my hands did this, and the end result is here, I made a little, you know, cotton ball bunny, and, you know, I see the small fruits of my labor here. And, like, so they're just different levels of that, but they're actually seeing them produce something. And then the more he does that, the more he'll want to get into a job. Like my husband has, where, like, my husband comes home and he, like, really just likes his day at work. I mean, I assume he likes coming home too, but it does not bother him to go to work at all. Like, he enjoys it. He likes that every day is different. You know, there's been promotions open above him. He's like, nope, I just want to do the work. I want to be somewhere new every day. I want to produce something different every day. You know, so I'm like, wow, I didn't know that careers could be that way. They didn't really teach that in school, but getting back to the arts and crafts and how important that is, like, that made the connection for me. So now I am going to try harder. Just making little things. They don't even have to be hard, but just to see your hands do something and produce it at the end. That's so cool.
Yeah. And you could be playing with sand, you could be playing with, you know, clay or whatever it is that you kind of give them and put in front of them. And kids are really imaginative. They will come up with stuff by themselves. They don't need to be sat in front and told, today we're going to draw this. You know, they don't need any of that. They just need, give them a few things, give them some materials, just let them problem solve. And that's the other thing that's missing with kids who aren't getting any of this hands-on stuff and arts, is that problem solving is massive, you know, just in being able to do that when you go out into work and just in life in general. And if you don't have those skills to be able to problem solve, then that's missing too. And the way to do that is through play and creativity and, you know, craft and whatever else you're doing. And that's the disconnect that's currently happening with, you know, and that's why the end result is that people don't want to hire kids that have been through university because they don't have those skills anymore, you know. So, yeah, there's a lot of connections that just started to light up the more that I researched this and looked at it.
And that makes sense, too, because yesterday we tried a new play group that kind of started to form in our area. And my son had two different groups of friends there, and they've also met before, so he didn't like that they just immediately went to play with each other and maybe, like, weren't as excited to see him as they normally are when we're one-on-one. And so that, you know, I got involved a little bit. I was like, come on, buddy, let's just go over, because you might have a lot of fun if you do that. But even that feeling, that is molding him into a better individual, like having that feeling. And I probably should sit down and talk with him about it now, you know, but he got in. And then there was another little girl there, and she kind of took over, and they were all sitting in a circle with their heads down. And I asked him later what he was doing, and he goes, well, so-and-so was being the wolf, and so-and-so was being, and and it's funny, because when I looked at them, I was like, oh, are they playing duck, duck, goose? I'm like, geez, they're just sitting there talking. Like, I wish they were running around getting their energy out. But now that you say that, they're having this whole other level of creativity, which is still burning energy in them. And they're, like, exercising a different part of their body. They're exercising their brains and being creative. And then now he'll think maybe to do that when he's with other friends or by himself or with his little sister. Mm-hmm. You know, so each little bit of play with kids is so important, and we just don't always notice it. And again, why isn't that taught in school?
Yeah, and collaboration and teamwork. And I've got a friend who, her son is home educated, and he puts on little plays with his friends, and they spend days preparing these plays that they then put on for their parents. But they kind of decide whose role, you know, who's got what roles, and when they come in with what they've got to say and what they dress up as. And, you know, there's a whole heap of things that they do. And all of that, as we spoke about, is is teamwork. It's learning to collaborate. It's learning to be diplomatic when someone is in tears because they didn't get the role that they wanted. You know, there's all these kind of things that happen. And we forget and we think, oh no, they're just playing. They're not learning. And we need to get them sat down and doing things. And that's what state education often is. But a lot of these things are really important skills and they're just happening, you know, right in front of us as well.
Wow. Yeah. So, and he's 5 years old in the kindergarten year, and I'm trying to balance like, okay, well, if he has a play date on this day, and that day, we don't have time to do the curriculum. But in having this conversation, I mean, the play dates are way more beneficial for him than sitting down and, you know, than honestly doing anything other than reading. Like if all we did in a day is I read to him and he played, like that is probably all a kid needs up until age like 7 or 8.
Yeah. And also this idea that, you know, so there's books that come out that are, this book is for a 10-year-old and this book's for a 5-year-old and this book's for, just let them read what they want and what they enjoy. Otherwise, you will kill that enjoyment by giving them, you know, giving them certain books that supposedly is for them. And if they're 9 and they're reading something that's for a 5-year-old, then who cares? They're reading, and that's important in itself, you know. And I always think that when we watch kids drawing and people are saying, well, they're not doing it right, or they're not, you know, observing whatever it is in front of them, or they're not playing with whatever crafts materials properly. They're just inventing their own stuff. Yeah. And that's even better. You know, there's imagination and innovation happening. And yeah, there's a whole heap of things that will eventually, if you let that keep going and percolating, will turn into entrepreneurs and innovators and, you know, those kind of things. We need so much more of that out there. And that's where it starts. It's not sitting in front of a screen or sitting in a classroom for hours and hours on end inside, you know?
Absolutely. I think we feel like everything has been invented because all we hear about are, you know, the Elon Musks and stuff, but in the Bill Gates, even though they probably didn't invent anything. But I think that is just perception to make us think there's no room for any more creativity or any more businesses, you know, because look how many businesses were shut down during COVID. And all that meant was that these technocracies or, you know, like Walmarts are just getting bigger and bigger, and Amazon get bigger and bigger. And meanwhile, the mom and pop shops, you know, can't even stay in business. So we do need more of them. And what was COVID like in Scotland? Like, I know here it was very much, don't kill your grandma, you know, get all your shots and, you know, whatever to not get banned on anything. But it was very much like if you weren't of the mainstream, you were shunned. Was it like that there?
We, in Scotland, we were one of the worst, I think, in Europe for our kind of strategies. We have a strange relationship in the UK because we are obviously United Kingdom, but then within the United Kingdom we have Wales and England and Northern Ireland and Scotland, and so they're always fighting because there's this inner fight of who has control, because we have our control comes from our main government in England, which is Westminster, but then Scotland has its own devolved government, so our devolved government was making all of the decisions, but whatever England was doing, they were making it much harsher. So whatever happened in England, they decided they would make that tenfold, you know. So if they were locking down for however long, we were locking down harder and longer. And, you know, they just wanted to make out that they were protecting us more than England was protecting their society, etc. So, it was a really kind of, and Wales was the same. So we were almost vying for who was the safest in, you know, the UK sort of thing.
Hey folks, me again, real quick. I just wanted to let you know that I do have a t-shirt and sweatshirt for sale now on my website. Be the Role Model Your Government Fears, the Homeschool How-To Podcast. If you'd like to get yours, you can head on over to my website, thehomeschoolhowto.com, and under shop, you can find t-shirts, hoodies, and that's about it so far. I would love your support. And if you share an episode or my podcast on social media, tag me in it or send me a screenshot, and I will put you in the running for a free sweatshirt all of your own. The drawing to be mid-December. Thank you for your support. Have a great day.
And I think we were watching, I was certainly watching the US because I didn't expect the US to fall the way it did. I thought because of the whole, the idea of the kind of constitution and just everything that came about with the US, so different from the UK, I thought that it was going to stay freer, and it was, and it didn't. It fell just as quickly as everywhere else. But yeah, our systems completely broke down and just became as the same as everywhere else, incredibly strict. But I was saying this before, is that if we had, you know, I think within our creative industries in the UK anyway, we're very much hijacked by agendas and ideologies. And if we'd had kids who'd been home educated, thought for themselves, had gone into creative industries, could visualise some of the stuff that was coming out during COVID, you know, maybe they could have got their visualisation and systems across so much clearer to make a better argument that we wouldn't have been in a lockdown, you know. So they could have put the stats up there about, I don't know, masks or, you know, whatever it was, or the kind of stats that we were getting, and made it so much more clearer. But we were so hijacked by the kind of agendas and ideologies within universities as well, that we don't have the workforce that are willing to stand up and go, well, actually, no, you know. So mainstream media is completely bought by the government, so as you know, it's the same everywhere. And people coming into these industries have been through the indoctrination centres, and so they think the same. And so there's nothing coming out of that that's dissent, or, you know, people who are, you know, critiquing the whole kind of philosophy behind the governments as well. So yeah, we were stuck in the same situations as well, and it was incredibly frustrating to see that, and see so many young people, I mean, all our universities obviously closed down, but to see young people stuck in a city or a country, even for us, we had a lot of students coming from different countries that got locked into a country that wasn't even their own country and couldn't go home. So yeah, that was really tricky for them as well. So I think a lot of lessons were learned there, or people woke up at that point, I think.
I hope so. And so that's interesting. So I bet, now, do you guys have guns in your country? Do citizens, private citizens have guns?
No, not really. We have farmers who have guns, but not to the level that America has.
So you were probably looking at America as, okay, they're going to be our, kind of our, the American citizens are going to be our leaders in this. Like, they've got things that, you know, they're less afraid because they have some protection against the government. And then to see them fall. And when I think about it, to bring it back to what you were talking about earlier, the, not just the media, but like Hollywood, they used all of that to make the Americans kind of follow suit with what they wanted. And, you know, we saw that with, you know, from everywhere, from country singers, which you would have thought would have been like the, no, my rights, my constitutional rights, yada, yada. No, you had them, you know, following suit, and the people like Howard Stern, who, you know, is just such a loudmouth, doesn't care what anyone thinks. He's saying, oh, if you don't do this, you know, you're a jerk. And so I would, I mean, then you got to think, how long did they brainwash those people, or did they pay them to do that, or were they planted there? Have they been an actor this whole time? You know, we trusted them, we thought we knew them, and then when you see the NBA and, you know, all Major League Baseball and all that, it really is such like, it's bigger than, I just wonder how this will be talked about in the future, decades to come. Because it really was a huge, I don't even know the words to kind of talk about it. And unless you're having the conversation, you don't think of all the little aspects to it.
No. And the thing is, they speak about it's a phrase that comes from, I can't remember who came up with the phrase, but it's the long march through the institutions, which is this thing that they've been doing since sort of the 50s and 60s, which is putting people into academia and into the arts and into theatre, you know, film, etc., just to make sure that as they go through that, they push the agendas. And it felt like at COVID, that was the peak. They'd got there, they'd done it, they'd got everyone into place, and they were ready to kind of, you know, promote the message. And there wasn't, I can't think of anyone who kind of bucked the trend. There was a couple of people in the UK, quite well known in the UK, who did buck the trend, but they got pretty quickly silenced and then removed from platforms.
Yeah.
And for young people to learn that, that's quite scary for them because they're just finding their way and they're just discovering these things. So to learn, oh, okay, if you say something that's not in line with the government or what everyone else is saying, then you lose, you know, an income or you lose your livelihood or whatever. So to learn that at a young age, I don't know what we've done, what damage we've done actually to a younger generation to have learned that really quickly.
And you lose your friends, you lose family
exactly.
members, you lose respect. You'll be, you know, where it used to be like a good thing to bat around different ideas. And they are learning that at an early age.
And that's the whole reason for university. It's supposed to be that you get challenged with your ideas and you arrive and there's people with different opinions from different countries, from different cultures and backgrounds. And you learn from all of this and they've got different ways of thinking and it might not fit with you. It might be a different religion, whatever it is. And you learn to challenge that, but in a way that doesn't cause fighting or cancellation or any of those things. You know, it's just really a friendly kind of discussion, but they've learned to just cancel what they don't like, you know. If kids in universities don't agree with someone coming to speak, just remove them, just shout enough and you can remove them from your life.
And now in America, since we're so diverse, you know, we might be allowed to have the guns, which they're trying to take that away now, but I do feel that they push fighting with each other, which is why we had like a Trump and a Biden and, you know, just these ridiculous things that of course someone's either going to be completely one way or completely the other because of, you know, I hate what this guy said or, you know, and then it goes on even more. You can get into the George Floyd stuff. So all of this, like the BLM riots, there are things that they put in front of us to make us fight because we are divided or we are so diverse that I think it is easy to divide. And they use the diversity to their advantage to make people fight. But now in Scotland, how diverse are you guys? Or is it just like you have to listen to us because you don't have guns and, you know, you have no other choice? Do they make the fighting go on there too?
Oh, definitely, definitely. We've got a funny thing when you mentioned George Floyd there was that the whole BLM riots and things that happened in the US, obviously we saw that happening. And what was hilarious was our young people over here decided to have similar protests and things just in terms of Black Lives Matter. But what was really hilarious was they were standing in front of our police who don't carry guns. Our police don't carry any guns over here. And they were standing in front of the police chanting the same things that you guys were in the US, and they were saying don't shoot, and it was like, well, it's not gonna happen because they don't have guns. So it was like this weird learned behavior. They didn't even know why they were doing it. They were just doing it and saying it, and it was like, we don't have guns, our police don't have guns, I have no idea why.
And
you're
do you have much diversity there?
Yes, I mean,
there is.
We have, obviously from the UK, then we have our original kind of empire and Commonwealth. So the countries that come over, we've got a good range and mix of people over here. So coming from all over the place. But they do try and divide and conquer. So we have a big Indian and Pakistani background within the UK. We have a lot of West Africans. We have a lot of West Indies over, just coming from, you know, the different countries that I suppose the empire were involved in the UK. And they do try and divide and conquer us a lot, which they never used to, but they're really making that obvious now just with all kinds of agendas that you can see happening. And we don't maybe have the same level of, you know, the kind of Trump and Biden situations and kind of opposing factions that way. But we do have the left and right in terms of, you know, we have at the moment, I can never remember who our Prime Minister is because they keep changing so fast all the time. But at the moment we have actually Rishi Sunak, who is our Prime Minister just now, and he is of Indian background and heritage as well. So yeah, we have that. And in Scotland we have our First Minister, who is Muslim. So yeah, we have lots of different things happening, but it's almost like there's these deliberate things to divide us and see the differences rather than work together to overcome, you know, the kind of state authority. Yeah. That's, it's keeping us occupied and ignoring the real things bigger that are going issues. On, I reckon. Yeah.
What do you think are the bigger issues? I mean, when you look at like the US border right now being completely open and our president being, you know, our president in America being, having a relationship with like a communist country like China, what are the big worries in, you know, in your mind for the world?
I suppose for us over here, we have a lot of open borders, immigration as well. So obviously we had Brexit, which happened, which meant we came out of the EU. And I suppose for some people, they thought that meant that our borders would close more, but it certainly hasn't changed anything. And so we've still got open borders. We still have people coming in and seeking asylum from a variety of countries. But seeking asylum is different from illegal immigrants, and we have lots of those coming in. And this has become another divisive tactic in the UK, which is you're either for the illegal immigrants or you're not, and you're a bad person if you're not, and if you're for them, then obviously you're a good person.
Right,
and they don't
here.
Seem to understand what happens on the back of that. You know, we're a small country, we don't have much, it doesn't take much to knock us and our economy if we take in a lot of people who aren't instantly kind of adding to our kind of economy either, you know, working and doing things as well. So it's really complex, and I think people need to think about it, but it certainly isn't shown that way, and it's certainly not taught that way in you know, universities and things. I would probably think most students have a very liberal left attitude to what's going on, I would say as well. And that's rife in universities, that's right across the board. And I don't know what it's like, I see things coming through from the US in terms of universities, but over here I would say most universities are pretty liberal left, I would say.
Yeah.
And so therefore the agendas that go with that are very much taught in these institutions.
Yeah, I would think even a step further is that, you know, if we're not already, you know, they would want like the sort of communist, so socialism, communism to be worldwide. I mean, when you look at what's going on with the World Economic Forum and the WHO, yeah. Different things that they're trying to pass, it is scary. I mean, it's lovely if everyone in the world can get along, but if it's everyone getting along at the expense of its citizens and their freedom, that doesn't work for when you're the citizen, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can't be free and equal, and that's what I was trying to explain that to the students. You can't have equality and freedom. You have to choose which way you go, because if you're going to be free, then of course people are going to have different levels of, you know, income and expertise and knowledge and skills and all those kind of things. And if you're wanting to be equal, then you're going to have to bring people down to that level and try and get some people up to that level. But again, you're not going to have any freedom because everyone's going to be forced to be on a similar level. And often what happens in socialism and communism is it always goes down. So standards
right.
are always pulled down rather than raising everyone up, you know. So
right.
and that's what happens in education. We're dumbing everything down rather than, you know, raising up the levels, I would say.
Yeah, they're not raising many people
no.
up. And, you know, a lot of times, like, do you have a welfare program like we have in our country?
Yeah, we have the kind of benefits system over here as well. So, and there's third generation benefits, you know, people who've been on benefits their parents have, their grandparents have, and that's just a way of life. But there's a lot of incentives in the UK, I would say. There's a very squeezed, I assume it's the same in the US, but a very squeezed middle, which is the people who are paying the taxes and earning and working and trying to get by, and their taxes are paying for the top end and the bottom end, you know, kind of for tax breaks for, you know, the 1% or whatever you want to look at it. And then the people at the bottom end who are on the state benefits and, you know, kind of taking advantage of all of that as well. So I think that's another thing that's a worry, and just in the West in general, is where we're heading with that, because, you know, does it incentivize students leaving to go and work? I don't know. You know, it's
right.
Do they then go on to just think, okay, I'll be a perpetual student and do a master's and then go into academia and I'll just be a, you know, a tutor or a lecturer and not actually go out into the workforce? So yeah, right. There's lots of questions raised with that.
So as we roll up on the hour, I want to make sure you get in everything that you wanted to talk about, and also kind of ask you, how are you allowed to lecture to the students the way you want to, or is that even being censored? And what do you tell them, or would you tell them if you were allowed to? In addition to the equality and freedom, I think that's a beautiful analogy right there, or way to put it.
Yeah, I think... no, we're not allowed to teach how we want to. If we were teaching how we wanted to, I think definitely when I speak to other tutors who are frustrated with this, we would have a much better calibre of student coming out of university if we could teach how we want to. However, we're very much censored. We have to consider lots of triggers. We have to think about different agendas. We have to think about different ideologies. We have to consider various sensitivities that students have, etc. So yeah, you're constantly feeling repressed from actually teaching, because you're always aware that you could overstep the mark at any point, and that can be dangerous in terms of for your job, you know, for just welfare in the building. You know, there's all kinds of things that can cause those issues. So no, we're not getting to teach as we want to. And I think there's so much that you could teach, but the one thing that is really important, I think, to get across to the students is the government doesn't have their back. They're not there to help. They're there to be very divisive. They've got an agenda which isn't to help anybody at all. It's just to make sure that they make money and, you know, the people who are working in the government make money. And I wish the students could see that, because if they could see through that, I'd like to think they would then waken up to some of the other tactics that have been used on them, you know. And that's the kind of area that's the critical thinking, and that's often what I teach, is critical thinking, but I have to do it so subtly. And we often speak about playing devil's advocate, so we can imagine being in another situation and we try to do it that way so that they can think about it from another perspective, because they can never really see things from other perspectives either, you know. So for them, if I mention the US, then it's, you're either far right and guns and Trump, or you're Biden and you're, you know, that's the opinion that is just ingrained because of this divisiveness. And
yeah,
so
wow.
Yeah, they have definite kind of ideologies about things.
Well, you have your work cut out for you with that. I love what you're doing. Where can people find you, especially if they want, you know, to kind of follow you on this journey and teach their kids, you know, about kind of the way you're trying to send this message across to the kids?
Yeah. I'm on hatched.substack.com, which is where I kind of keep my main platform. I've actually just created a toolkit, which is a problem solving toolkit, and it's a creative toolkit as well. So it's for parents of any age of children, up to kind of, you know, about to go to university age, to dip into and pick up ideas, what they can do with their kids, what they can kind of teach at different varying levels, how they can problem solve, fun activities, it's all those kind of things. So I've just kind of created that on Substack in the last few months. And then I've also been working with a person over here in the UK who's got a fantastic platform called Sarah Plumley, and she's on sarahplumley.com. And I've created a little kind of platform on there, which is Creative Confidence, which is worth checking out. Just Sarah has an extensive amount of maths modules and courses and teaching core subjects, and she's doing it in a really good, logical way. And so she's doing some fantastic stuff. So yeah, I've been building this on Substack for quite some time. I do think parents struggle with creative stuff and crafting and kind of what can they do. So I've got this little space where I've built these toolkits to get families able to do some problem solving and creativity and getting kids critically thinking and getting their kind of growth mindset rather than a fixed mindset building as well.
I love that. And I'm going to put links to both of those in the description for the show. So anyone listening can just go right on there and click on that. So I have one question for you. I'm somehow got picked to be the gym teacher at this new co-op that we signed up for. And it's brand new. So there's like two kids in the age 6th grade through 12th grade. What is something I could do for an hour? I have two children that I'm supposed to do gym with for an hour. And I brought weights last week and they were just kind of like, no. And so we did the soccer ball. But what could I do that's like a cool problem solving thing outside?
So what age group is that then that you've got?
Well, I have all three. So I have kindergarten through second grade. There's four kids and that's a little easier, but I'll take any suggestions too. And then a third grade through fifth grade has three kids. And then there's only two kids for ages 6th through 12th grade. So they're maybe around 14 years old and there's only two of them. And I have them for an hour cause they merged kind of the middle school and high school together. And I'm like, what do I do for a whole hour with two boys that are 14 years old?
I suppose you could play, you could have some kind of treasure hunt or something where they have to kind of move about and do things within, I don't know what space you've got to work in, but
there's is it outside. Almost like,
yeah, so is there a kind of circuit where the older kids could maybe think of places to hide these things and then they have to kind of help the younger kids round this and the whole thing is that they're moving around different circuits and they have to
problem.
Do certain
things? I don't have them together. So the little kids are off in a different class when I have the older ones. Maybe they could, the older ones could hide stuff for the little ones to find later that day. That's a good idea.
Yeah. But I think also just circuits, things that are really fast for them. They don't like to do repetitive stuff that they just do the same thing constantly. So if you have certain things and activities and it's timed and how many reps or how many things can they get in, you know, kind of 3 minutes or something like that, then it builds competitiveness, but then they start competing with time as well, which is a good thing.
Store and I'm thinking of I used to have a skip it and you put it on your ankle and you jump over it with your other foot.
Exactly. You could kind of return back to the nostalgic sort of time of, you know, kind of gym type stuff and get them to do various things, but they're only doing it for a very short burst and then have to move on to the next thing. Keeps them going, keeps their mind moving and stops them from getting bored with just one activity that they're doing as well.
I like that.
And I suppose the younger kids could also have a nice little kind of treasure hunt, so it makes it easier for them. There's a reward at the end if they finish all their different kind of activities or circuits or something as well. So yeah, I think small bursts is always the way. I'm still doing that with 19-20 year olds at university. I'm teaching in like minutes so that their brains can absorb it. So I've learned that that's something definitely that they prefer, particularly older kids. They don't want to just be stuck in one activity and be bored by it. They often look bored anyway when they're doing these things, don't they?
But yes. I thought these kids, I was going to teach them all about how to lift weights and how we can do muscle confusion and all the different muscle groups. And they were just like, no.
Yeah.
I like that, though, the small bursts. And that works for, like, even doing a curriculum because I do a phonics with my five-year-old. And recently I noticed if I say, let me put the timer on and see how quick we can get through phonics because it's supposed to only be 10 minutes. But if I don't say that, he's like, did you see the butterfly? Look it, there's an ant. Look, you know, like he will just do anything to not move on to the next part. But if I time it, he'll want to get it all done in the quickest time.
Yeah.
So saying to him, ooh, yesterday it took 10 minutes. Let's see if we can do it in 9 minutes today. So that's a really good key. And I'm going to do that. I'm going to go to the dollar store and see what kind of fun stuff they have. Do you guys have a dollar store in Scotland?
We kind of have the equivalent. We've got Poundland. so it's kind
That's a cuter name.
I don't know.
Ours is a lie because nothing's a dollar there anymore anyway.
No, it's the same here. It's exactly the same here. But yeah, just get loads of stuff, make some activities for them and make it really fast. They'll start competing against each other and want to get it over quicker. So they'll just do more and more, I would imagine. So yeah.
I love it.
Be good to know how they get on. Let me know.
I will, Nicola. Thank you so much. Nicola from Hatched. Check out her page.
And thank you so much for having me on. It's been really nice to speak to you and actually meet you. I listened to all your podcasts and I'm like, this is such a nice person. I really need to speak to her.
I bet my mother wouldn't agree, but I'm kidding. No, she's fine. She'd be like, well, as long as she's nice to other people. That's what she always told me growing up. As long as you're nice when you go, when you leave my house. So I'm going to try to work on that with my daughter. Thank you so much. You are such a sweetheart. You. Thank you for what you're doing.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. If you've enjoyed what you heard and you'd like to contribute to the show, please consider leaving a small tip using the link in my show's description. Or, if you'd rather, please use the link in the description to share this podcast with a friend or on your favorite homeschool group Facebook page. Any effort to help us keep the podcast going is greatly appreciated. Thank you for tuning in and for your love of the next generation.